to the club because you're that kind of nerd.
Hello and welcome to the club that is that kind of nerd, a show where we talk about the nerdy things that we're passionate about, and then we judge each other on what we bring to the table. If you're hearing my voice, that means that I have won last week, which means I won an argument, which rarely happens, so I will be your host. But I am joined by the wonderful, the incomparable, the unreplaceable Josh Burns and Brian Thornton.
What up?
I'd appreciate it if you stopped using my full name.
Brian Evelyn Thornton.
It's my government name in a public space.
So during the conversation, or maybe at the end of a topic, or whenever the hell I feel like it, I will be judging the conversation and awarding points to my co-host. The winner at the end of the show with the most points will be the host for next week. Let's just jump right into this. First off, how's everybody doing? How you guys feeling?
Wonderful.
I am feeling like you should call your congressman and get rid of daylight savings time once and for all. I'm done with this BS.
Isn't it? See, now here's the thing. I was talking about this yesterday. I thought that everyone had agreed we were going to do this one more time.
Right.
In the spring, right. And then never again.
I thought it was done. I didn't think I did.
And now I'm being told no.
Yeah. Then Congress was like, nah, that makes logical sense. We can't implement logic. Are you guys fucking kidding me? Get out of here. Let's all move to Arizona. They don't deal with this shit, except we have to deal with Arizona, wouldn't we?
That's right. You could also move to the middle of Indiana where you cross the street and your clock changes.
What kind of a society do we live in?
It's very, very strange. Hey, listen, and we're not clearly this is not a political podcast, but tomorrow, that is Tuesday when you're listening to this.
Or Wednesday, depending on when CJ.
Well, if it's Wednesday, then
it would be today.
Time is gone.
But if it's Tuesday, it's election day locally, and you should get out and vote for your local election.
Absolutely.
And if you're listening to this in the future and you missed it, well, you're the problem.
That's right.
Josh, correct this phrase for me. It doesn't matter who you vote for as long as you vote.
I think it does matter who you vote for. So it's no matter who you vote for. Make sure you vote. And decisions are made by those who show up.
That is very true. There is all your West Wing and Bartlettisms that you can possibly get in one day. There'll probably be more, knowing this show.
Knowing you too, there will be plenty more.
All right. Well, let's take a little trip. I've come with a topic for this week, and since I'm hosting, I'm going to go first. So here's something I came across one of my TikTok feeds, and I'll start this off pretty specific, but then if we want to go branch out a little bit more, we can. The three of us here are, I would dare say, Apple fanboys, right? I think that's a fair assessment, right?
We didn't start off this way,
but we did fall into it eventually, and it's just one of those things that just happens, right? It just happens to you. So knowing that, that means that we have several years where we were PC users, several years that we just said no to that. I mean, Josh rocked that Evo so damn hard that I think HTC was like giving him a couple bucks under the table to keep that alive and going, which means that there's a rich history of Apple products that we probably passed on. Right. So I'm curious, now knowing what you know about macOS, now that you know about Apple and what you would do, if you had a time machine and could go back and buy Apple products when they launched, when you were out in that world, maybe change that trajectory for you, what would you be looking to buy? I gave some thought about this and I came up with three results. Two of them you're going to be okay with. One of them you're going to hate, which is classic CJ. If you don't mind, I'll start off. The first one is the 1998 colored iMacs, the ones that were like everywhere in school. But the one that it kind of began that see-through tech stuff where you could kind of see the guts of it, but it also came in that like Bondi blue, and then they came out in a random rainbow of colors. And they brought that back in the new iMacs, but I remember thinking, those look so cool, but my IBM-loving dad being like, those computers are inferior, and that is wrong, and now realizing that would have been a really cool iMac G3 to just sit around and play with. I think that would have been super fun. The next one is something that I actually pined for while I was working at Target back in 2004, and it was kind of at the height of the mania of the iPod. And that was the U2 iPod. Do you guys remember the U2 iPod at all?
U2 the band?
U2 the band.
Oh, I definitely wouldn't have gotten that.
I figured as much. Brian, did you know this iPod at all? Were you in tuned with Apple products in 2004?
This is the black iPod with the red wheel.
Black iPod with the red wheel. It was 20 or 30 gigabytes. I can't remember the exact size. And it came with all of U2's music and then their autographs etched on the back. But like that black faceplate and red wheel was just like, oh man, a ugly color combination. I love that super color ugly combination. And maybe the iPod Hi-Fi to go with it, but I could live without that. The final thing, which is something that I probably would have bought at launch if I had the money, but I'm thankful that we didn't, considering how bad this product ended up being. And that was the second generation Mac Pro, also known as the Trash Can Mac. Which just had a really cool design. They made a big deal about can't innovate my ass during the developer conference. But that was immediately plagued with thermal throttling and terrible conditions. But that thing rocked from 2013, I think, all the way till 2019. And it was not very well received. So a discontinued product, but always look cool. I always see them come up on like eBay or something for a couple $100, and I just like the aesthetic so much. I'm like, I wonder if it's worth it, and then I talk myself out of it every single time. So with that and with my suggestions, I'm kind of curious if you guys have this. If you looked through your history and you determined that Apple is just too limited of a scope, I'm willing to open it up, but I kind of want to hear your picks for Apple.
I'm boring. I'll go first, Josh, because I am boring. And I feel like you would have way more to say. I wouldn't change anything about how I got introduced to Apple. I really wouldn't. I don't think there was anything. I came in at the iPhone 5. And yeah, hindsight being 2020, if I got the first iPhone and then, I don't know, bought a second one and then never opened it, then I could sell it for a lot of money, blah, 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 blah.
Not for that purposes,
that's
correct.
That's right. Like, but no, I don't think there's anything I would have done differently. I got the iPhone 5, which in my opinion is when the iPhone started to be really, really good. Like, it was good, and then it got really good. And then I came in at the right time. I got the iPhone 5. I got shortly after. So, I mean, we've shared the story about how I got brought over to Apple, right? Do yes. I need to share it again?
Nah. I mean, you can if you want to.
I mean, well,
I get to take credit for it. It's great.
Long story short, I had an Android phone. It was really upsetting me one day at work. I legitimately threw it across the store, and CJ said, come with me. I will take care of you, my son. And he sold me an iPhone, and I was very against it. He said, shut up, take it, give it 2 weeks. If you don't love it in 2 weeks, I'll be happy to exchange it for you. And I loved it. And then within 2 weeks, I was back getting a MacBook. I bought an MD-101, which was probably one of the best MacBook Pros on the market at the time. And then, I don't know, what, 6 months later, the first iPad Air came out, and I got one of those. And, like, I came in at Apple when, like, things started taking off. And, like, they were like, hey, we finally figured out how to make the iPad really great. Here's this iPad Air. Here's this iPad mini. Hey, we finally figured out how to make the Apple TV work. Here's Apple TV 3. Like, I came in at the right time. The iOS was stable. It worked. It was secure. Nothing I would change about it. It doesn't – I don't look back and say, oh, I wish I got in sooner. No, I have no desire to do that. And because I am boring, I am hoping Josh has something more to add to this conversation.
Absolutely. I wouldn't change how I got involved with Apple's ecosystem. Here's why. I had the first
Dynamite topic, CJ.
Yeah,
I had the first right I had the first iPod in 2000 or you know whatever. It was great. Loved it. Used it for a long time. It was great. However, it wasn't until the iPhone 4S, right? The reason that I got an iPhone at all was because of the shutter speed on the camera, right? It was clearly better than what Android was offering. And I honestly didn't use that phone for anything else other than taking pictures. I hated it. I thought it was a terrible OS. It wasn't nearly as customizable. Like, I had all kinds of problems with it. And, You know, I was trying to do a presentation on my 17-inch, whatever the – it would have been back then, I guess, an i7, right?
Yeah. It was definitely Intel. Yep.
Like a big, powerful laptop, and I was just trying to get a presentation, like, marked up so that I could present it, and just nothing was working properly. And my friend was like, just use my MacBook. And I'm like, I don't know how to use a MacBook. He's like, it's the same thing. It's the same thing. Gives me the MacBook, and then loans it to me. He's just like, look, take it home, play with it. You're going to like it. And that was OS X Mountain Lion, which was the first Mac OS that had handoff, and it was designed to work with your other devices. And I said, that's pretty cool. Found on like Facebook at the time, a buddy of mine who wanted to get rid of his MacBook Pro and wanted, an exchange. He didn't want money. He wanted a brand new iPad. So I used, my financing and bought him an iPad and got plenty of time to pay that off while I took a hold of his MacBook Pro, which was like the first unibody aluminum, MacBook Pro. The thing was a monster. It screamed. It was awesome. Even though it was a few years old, it was fast as hell. Everything worked great. Handoff worked like a charm. Like I was sold on the Apple ecosystem once all of these devices kind of got the functionality got pulled in together, which nothing else, right? Because Android, Windows, all of it fragmented. And I had tried using Windows OS smartphones.
God, I remember that.
The HTC Titan was a super powerful phone. It was a great phone, but the OS was shit.
Yep.
Right? And then WebOS on the Palm phones, the OS was amazing and the hardware was shit.
Yeah.
And so like nothing, and Android wasn't doing anything new. I mean, really, this was 2012. Other than like introducing phones that were LTE compatible and bigger screens and heavier phones, nothing really was happening, right? They weren't innovating around longer battery life. Obviously the storage was all external. It was all SD cards, so they didn't have to do anything, you know, interesting there. And Apple seemed to be making slimmer form factors with battery life that lasted longer and, you know, more internal storage. Great. This is all the things that I want and everything works together. Just give me and I'll shut up. So that's what I did. I just got all the things and I shut up because Apple had solved a problem that I couldn't solve myself, which was ecosystem and everything working together. And that's all I really cared about. And to a degree, it's still all I care about. You got to remember, like, and look, if I was honestly, if I was CJ, you know, like your age in 2012, I'd still have Android devices today because I wouldn't have been, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
At that point in my life, the name of the game was convenience. Like, I don't care how, like, if I have to do any work at all for this device to do what I want it to do, I'm not going to do it.
Right.
And Apple solved for that at a time in my life where that's all I needed, all I wanted. And so ever since then, every single item I've purchased has been an Apple device.
Yeah. It's the I'll throw money at it if it just does what I needed to do without me having to tweak. Right.
That's
which,
right.
Which is, when you're young, you're like, hey, I don't necessarily have money, but I've got time. So if I have to set up a whole thing to make something work, I'll invest the time into this. But then later on, you're just like, listen, time is the commodity now. Let's hurry up and go. Let me get this out of here. All right. Well, I'm glad. Did we, by the way, if I'm looking at this right, the unibody Mac, right? That came out in like 2008. Did we all get our first Macs as the MD-101? Was that?
Yes.
Is that, we all share that as our first Mac?
Yeah. The 13-inch MD-101 was an awesome,
because quite
awesome,
frankly,
awesome
the Macs beforehand were not great. They were fine. You say, oh, I wish I had those, you know, clear color ones. You wish that for nostalgia's sake now because they look kind of retro, but like
they weren't performers.
They were not
no.
good computers. Every like
because
every
the,
time
the
I'd
OS
see,
wasn't amazing.
Yeah, every time I'd see one of those computers, I'd be like, nope, not using those. The four that they would have at the edge of the table for like while I was in high school and college, hell no, I'm using Windows. It was not a good system.
I had the computer lab in college didn't have any Macs, but there was a separate one upstairs in the old main hall that had the Macs. That's where the Macs lived. And you always just kind of walk past them because they're in a very inconvenient location. The one day I had to do that, I had to use a Mac, and it was one of the iMac G3s. And again, coming from Windows, at first you're like, I don't know how to use this. This is dumb. And then I did use it, and it was pretty darn good. But I thought it was interesting. We all still rock the MD-101. I had that right here behind me, still running a backup media server up until about 4 months ago. Still working, chugging along, doing its thing. So that thing was a beast. And well, at least we all shared that journey together. All right. Well, that is what I have. I'll be holding off on some points. I'll turn it over to one of you and see. Hey, what do we got,
Josh?
We all agree. At least I think we do that. Comic Cons are a good time.
I've enjoyed every Comic Con I've ever been to.
We all. I think agree that Comic-Con is a uniquely nerdy event, but one that is nevertheless pretty inclusive. I don't think I've ever recalled being at a Comic-Con and seeing people go, whoa, this type of person doesn't belong here. Agree with that or disagree with that?
I can agree with that.
Agreed.
All right, inclusive environment. So I'm going to try to be as inclusive about this as I possibly can be. Listen, this is nothing, I swear to God, this is nothing short of cultural appropriation, and I don't want you to take my nerd culture and make it basic bitch, but you're doing it, Bravo, you're doing it for the third year, and I didn't even know this was a thing until it came across my TikTok feed, and I went, oh, sweet Mary, mother of Lord, what is this? BravoCon.
Oh my God, I saw this.
BravoCon, from November 3rd to the 5th in Las Vegas. I swear to you, I can't make this shit up, CJ. Here's what it is. The entire event is a pumpkin spice latte.
Wait, when you say Bravo, are you talking the TV channel network Bravo?
Bravo.
Yeah. Let me, I'm gonna read off the big day for Comic-Con is Saturday, right?
Right.
Okay. Let's read off the Saturday agenda. They're called, by the way, these people are called Bravo Lebs, not celebrities. They're Bravo Lebs.
Okay.
Bravo Palooza in the Spill the Tea room.
Okay. So it's legitimately,
is that sinking in?
All of the Real Housewives.
Yeah.
Show up and they do panels, and that's where they shoot their little, you know, reunion specials and stuff like that. I
watch if you want a legitimate reason to be angry about society. Watch a few of the TikToks or Instagram reels,
right,
from BravoCon this weekend. Do they have one for
Top Chef? Otherwise, I'm out. Right, like hard.
No, man, this is like.
I just found the website. I have to see the schedule.
Good.
Oh God, no.
I mean, listen. This was made exclusively for people that say thank you like that,
right?
And people that say I love that for us.
Josh, I understand the indignation and I love that for you, but the nerd culture does not own the word con. There are plenty of cons for everything. There is a sneaker con. There is
That's nerd culture.
Vacuum con.
Nerd culture.
How are vacuum
technology? Technology.
You can't blanket that with technology.
Nerd culture.
How is fast food nerd culture? Now you're just appropriating other cultures and calling that nerd culture, so that you can continue to be mad about BravoCon.
I'm going to be mad about BravoCon.
And you can be mad about all. Listen, I'm not going to argue that we need this con. I don't think we need this con. I'm with you, right? But like, I'm not so much angry from the, oh, keep your peanut butter out of my chocolate, you know, type of anger. I'm more so like, to your point, this is what is popular. And that's just sad as a culture, right?
Like, where?
Extremely popular.
People love this stuff.
This is the generation that
oh my God.
Keeping Up with the Kardashians is from. Like, this is thanks to Keeping Up with the Kardashians and the fact that we made shit like that famous. And what else was on MTV? Like, The Hills and shit like that. Now we get, like, the Real Housewives of Bumblefuck County.
This kind
of
started with the Real World, right? This was, like, MTV's fault.
Yeah, this is
gross.
This is all that MTV reality.
So it was Road Rules.
I just want to watch people scream at each other and backbite each other and be the worst human beings to each other. And that's my entertainment. Nothing that you are, like, listen, I don't watch this shite, and I don't think either of you do either, but... This does have a following.
I honestly didn't know Bravo was still
a
thing.
Bravo is still very much a thing.
I thought Bravo went away. Like, I don't know where to watch Top Chef anymore.
On Bravo.
I don't. Is it still on?
Yes. Yeah. I'm waiting for the next season. They just wrapped up All Stars in London. Fantastic season.
Most of the Bravo shows are on Peacock, I believe.
Yeah, it's definitely Peacock.
I understand if everything has everything. There are a lot of things that have a con, right? If you're interested in something, there's Dice Con, right? There's if you're interested in a hobby or an activity, there is a convention for it, right? Like there certainly is. I can understand again the over corporatization of a con like this, saying, do we really need Andy Cohen to get together in, I don't know, Atlanta, I'm assuming. To have this conversation, like, or New York, like, do we need a 3-day palooza to talk about the Pat the Puss with Erica and Jane? Like, do we need that? Do we need a session in a hall? Not really sure that's necessarily something that we need. However, you said this is the third year that this is something has happened?
Yeah, third year. Yeah.
There's a demand for it.
There clearly is a demand for it there's 3 years.
Also, Wendy's is a sponsor for this. Like
so is Clorox.
Well, you got to clean up the mess after you've been backbitten, according to
after
the
you pour Ryan. Someone's drink on someone else, you've got to have
you
something
clean that.
Up.
It could get sticky, so a good Clorox wipe. We'll just take care of that and disinfect. Right. It kills 99% of all germs. This is not an ad. I'm just saying I'm very passionate about Clorox wipes.
How much is a ticket for Comic-Con International?
That's a good
San
question.
Diego.
For San Diego?
Brian, for San Diego.
You're looking at about $40 a day for 5 days. If you want to go for all 5 days, you're looking well between $120 and $180.
Oh, my God.
This starts.
You don't realize? You never
this,
do
that. No. This starts. If you want to go all 3 days, it's $550. For the base package, and if you want, like, whatever, Fastlane, access to things, extra things, it's $1,200.
Okay.
If you want a day,
I'm not saying it's reasonably priced. I think the argument is that
$250 for a day. For basic.
So I view this as, let's put it this way. Let's put it this way, because these Bravo Labs, as we will call them, are not, I mean, they are celebrities, but they're not celebrities, right? To some people, this is like buying a ticket and getting guaranteed to see Robert Downey Jr. or to meet Robert Downey Jr. or to take a picture with this person. Like, this is not, like, I don't know what's included in those days. I don't know how it works. There's got to be more than just you get to show up to the convention floor and watch a bunch of different panels. Comic-Con, when we talk about Comic-Con, any Comic-Con, there is, hey, here's your access to get in the building, which is what I just quoted you. And then from there, there are panels you can attend, and there are booths you can buy, and that costs extra money if you want to buy something, obviously. But, like, if you want to, some people charge for their autograph. If you want to get, if you want to get Norman Reedus's autograph, that's a $250 autograph. If you want to get a picture with Mark Hamill, that's a $500 picture in some cases. Like, there are VIP packages. There are things that you do to pay for and bundle these things together and say, hey, I want the autograph. I want the picture with them. I want the meet and greet, right? Like, there are those things. So you tell me the price, and if the price is, this is your ticket to just walk in the door, yes, that's ridiculous. But if there's anything else included in it, not so ridiculous when you start looking at it and comparing it to something like San Diego Comic-Con.
Josh, first of all, I'm going to have to play replay the moment that I heard you losing faith in humanity on this episode. It happened. Mm-hmm. It was absolutely beautiful. You'll actually get some points right at the end of this episode. But is the point that not everything needs a con?
I think is that the point?
I need Brian to be less reasonable.
I need Brian to be more reasonable.
I need Brian to be more angry. I need there to be more righteous indignation.
I think
CJ, this does not like. This is just. I mean, watch.
This would be a cruise. I'd be okay with this being a cruise, mainly because there's a potential.
The boat might sink. Right. Please watch any TikTok or Instagram reel about this with a straight face and tell me that these people are making a positive contribution to society.
I can argue,
right?
Listen,
I don't think these people need our money. We can argue that all day. You add nothing. What have you done? Right. I got into this argument with someone else. I'm not going to point fingers at any one member, but look at the Kardashian family. What the fuck have they added besides drama and drama and drama?
We continually
give them money by watching their shows, buying their brand, what have you, right? And you could sit there and tell me, oh, Kim's a smart, savvy businesswoman, all you want. That means nothing when all I see of her is not, here's her smart, savvy businesses. She's built a brand on being a mess. And that entire family has built a brand on being a mess. And for us as a society to continue to promote that with our money,
right.
That's the thing. And it's not listen, I like a good shit show. I think everybody likes to see other people who are like, oh, see, they don't have it together. It's okay that I'm a mess because these people are a mess. I understand the appeal with that. It is the mega superstardom that has come out of it in recent years. And when I say recent, I mean the past decade. Because we can sit here and blame MTV for this all we want, but
social media is the problem,
right? But there ain't nobody on the
writer's
real
strike
world.
Back when this first started. That's what started all this,
right? But there ain't nobody on the real world making multi-$1 billion.
No,
right? I defy you to give me 10 cast members of the real world, and that was on for several seasons. Yet you can name at least half the cast of Jersey Shore, and that's the thing, right? I can name half the cast of Jersey Shore. I've seen three episodes.
I can't.
I unfortunately can. Because they're everywhere. You can name the Kardashians because they're everywhere. And they're everywhere for being a mess. And I think that's the bigger issue is we have built a con, going back to your initial topic, BravoCon, we built a con putting people on a pedestal for being terrible human beings. And whether or not they are really that in real life, most of them aren't. But that's what they portray on TV. That's the brand that they put out there. And we are supporting that, that's a problem. I agree with you, Josh. This is not necessary. But the sad fact is, it makes money, makes plenty of money. People pay $1,200 for the VIP pass, and that's the bigger issue, is that people would actually pay for that. Because the first year that they put this on and it doesn't make money, then it stops. You know,
I need the Running Man to be an actual show.
what I'm taking away from this, Josh, is that you remember how great of an experience we had back in 2015 where we went to Steel City Con together, the three of us?
Yeah.
Mm.
And we haven't done that. Josh wants to go to
another Comic-Con together.
We're about to get onto 10 years of going to of not going to a con together. I think we need to do that again. I think we need to hit the road.
I'll tell you what, gentlemen. Go.
That'll wash it out. Hold on. If we do that, would that wash out just the bad taste in your mouth of knowing the fact that this existed?
I don't know, man. I'd be I'm honestly afraid to see the number of people
who attend
filming reels and doing all kinds of just social media bullshit.
Yeah.
Instead of experiencing what's in front of them. I don't know, man. I've lost a ton of faith in humanity.
Well, I'm not sure. I think part of that could be sunsetting too. You don't hear about these things as much as you used to. I know, which is probably why they decided 3 years ago to do a con, is because there was a time where the Real Housewives of New Jersey were a headline in all the entertainment media, and it hasn't been like that for a while. So, I mean, maybe this is like the last death rattle of the reality TV shows that we see like this. Who knows?
I don't know. They keep cooking up Housewives shows. Like they do. They just keep pumping them out.
Do you think that's because they're popular, or do you think that's because we need to inject fresh blood? And they're cheap. Those shows and reality television in general is super freaking cheap to make. Yeah. And so if they get a couple hundred viewers out of it and maybe a couple hundred dollars from BravoCon, then it makes it worth it, you know? So like,
it's true.
I don't know if you'll ever see the complete death of this stuff. I don't think you'll ever see it completely go away. But I mean, I do think that, like, hey, I don't see it on my feed as much as I used to. And the only reason I know of BravoCon is because BravoCon is coming up, and the people, I don't know about you, Josh, but the ads I've seen for it are ads. They're not from people who are actually going and saying, I'm here at BravoCon and this is wonderful. Whereas like when San Diego Comic-Con or when New York Comic-Con was happening last month, my feed was filled with
posting.
Like, hey, I'm a cosplayer and we're doing this at Comic-Con, right? And like, you know, it was a little bit more difficult this year with the strikes going on. But that's what I see. So I think, I don't know. I think what you're seeing is paid advertisements. I don't know if it's as organic, but I don't know what your feed looks like.
I'm also hearing I
don't want to see any of it.
I would like to opt out. Is that possible? Can I opt out?
I mean, you can. Can't you put in that you're not interested in content?
Yeah,
like
but if they're paying for it.
Yeah.
If they're paying for
money talks. That's what it is, right? We live in a society. I'm sorry I wasn't more angry, Josh.
I needed you to be more angry.
I apologize. Well, I'll tell you what. Maybe I can be the palate cleanser here, and I don't know how much discussion we can get out of this, because quite frankly, it's going to just be me talking to you for a bit. I mean, I have a topic we can talk about and we can debate about, and maybe we'll do that after this. But I was asked by you gentlemen to share in a recorded format my experience on Friday night. When I got to go see the Russo brothers speak at Smod Castle Cinemas. And when I say I got the opportunity to go, I mean I paid money for a ticket to go to Smod Castle Cinemas and see the Russo brothers speak. I'm not like special or anything. But for those of you who don't know, Smod Castle Cinemas, if you're a fan of this gentleman, you already know, is the movie theater owned by Kevin Smith. Located in Atlantic Highlands, New Jersey, literally 20 minutes away from Jay and Silent Bob's Secret Stash, and steps away from the Quick Stop where he used to work and where RST Video and where Clerks was shot, right? This, about a year ago, theater went up for sale. This apparently was the theater that Kevin Smith used to go to all the time as a kid. And he said, well, I want it. And he bought this movie theater. And, you know, now they operate just like a standard movie theater, but they also do special events. And this is what I find really interesting about Smod Castle Cinema as a whole. So they hosted this panel discussion, essentially what you would see at a Comic-Con. But at Smod Castle Cinemas, Kevin Smith being your host with the Russo brothers. But they also do, like, themed movie nights. He'll film some of his podcast stuff there. I'm pretty sure an episode of Fat Man Beyond was filmed here. He'll do, you know, special events. They're doing a Tromo movie night coming up soon. They're doing a Zack and Miri Make a Porno 15th anniversary screening and Q&A with Kevin Smith. They do a lot of these events, and then they also, you know, they show movies. They've got like five screens, so they're not showing a ton, right? They're showing the big stuff right now. So This was a unique opportunity and decided to go, and I'm extremely happy I did. Very fun night, very interesting. Here's what I'll say. Like, feel free. I don't want this to just be me talking. So feel free to comment along the way as I tell you some of the things that I picked up from this discussion with the Russo brothers, because it was 2 hours and 40 minutes of
wow,
nice. Them talking.
It was a lot. I learned a lot. It was a lot of inside baseball with movies. It was also a lot of inside baseball about Marvel. I discovered a thing or two that I was not totally clear on. Well, first off, he started off the night with an auction. And Kevin Smith, being the showman that he is, comes out and explains why, apparently, before every one of these events, they do a mini auction of some kind. Because they are a small movie theater, and they are trying to keep the lights on. And when Avatar, The Way of Water, one of the biggest movies ever, came out, he saw 12 people in the movie theater. That's the kind of business this theater is doing. So,
well, also, that's the kind of numbers Avatar, The Way of Water are doing. So,
I'm talking opening night, which Way of Water did do well opening night. Creed 3, he says 8 people showed up, 1 left in the middle of the screening.
God damn.
And he auctions 3 items off. One is the poster to the event for the night. And then he auctioned off 2, 1 Avengers Infinity War poster, 1 Avengers Endgame poster, both signed by the Russo brothers.
For the listener who doesn't know, in Brian's brand new palatial estate, in his recording cavern in the basement, are not only the entire Blockbuster collection of which he owns, but several framed movie posters hung throughout.
I wanted it so bad.
When I heard that, I'm like, Brian's like, listen, this isn't crazy stupid money.
It was crazy stupid money.
Okay. Well, what did it end up being?
The Infinity War poster went for $375.
Ooh.
And the Endgame poster went for $420. A little bit too much for my blood on a night.
Open or silent auctions?
Open.
Okay.
So it was a little bit too rich for my blood that night, but it was still, if you were to go to an event like this, this is what to expect, right?
Right.
And then obviously they bring the Russo brothers out and they start talking to them. And so a lot of it was, you know, talking through their career leading up to the Marvel Universe. Some things from there, obviously we know they worked on Arrested Development. They worked on Community. Mm-hmm. They did You, Me, and Dupree. And
oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they directed You, Me, and Dupree. They were talking about, they pulled a Kevin Smith. They did a short film, maxed out all their credit cards, put all their money on the line, went into $30,000, $40,000 of debt to make a small short film that they showed not at Sundance. They showed at, I guess, like a smaller known Slam Dance.
Yeah.
And I was telling my wife about this. These guys are talented, but this was one of these things where like talent meets lightning in a bottle, complete chance, luck. Their film was inspired by the 90s independent wave movement that included people like Kevin Smith and Steven Soderbergh and Quentin Tarantino. And apparently it started off, I think this was the film they were talking about. The theater started off full and then was emptied by the end of it. Like no one made it through.
Right.
But apparently Steven Soderbergh was not at Sundance that year because he had a fight with Robert Redford over something. They don't even remember what. And he was at that Slam Dance. And he called them up 2 weeks later and said, I saw your film. I like it. Let's talk. And so Soderbergh apparently was a huge influence in them in going from, hey, what you're making right now is very niche. Let's talk about, like, you've got to, in this industry, it's great to be arts and it's great to make art and it's great to be niche. But at the same time, you got to make people money. Otherwise, you don't get money to make another film.
Right.
So, you know, he was very instrumental in teaching them how to balance that and how to make more commercialized art and be able to make people money so that they could continue to get hired. So not to just rehash everything that they said and to get to the good stuff, which I know is what you want to hear about, which is the Marvel stuff. They had done a bunch of television. They've just kind of dipped in and out of different television projects, getting things up and running, moving on. So everything they had done had been canceled within 2 years, 2.5 years. But they somehow got on a list to meet with Kevin Feige for Marvel and for Captain America, the Winter Soldier. So here's some of the tidbits I learned. So apparently Marvel has this practice, which I did not know about, which they will just talk to a bunch of filmmakers, whoever they think is doing something interesting at the time. And sometimes people get the job. Sometimes they just walk away with an idea to add to the script or whatnot. And that was one of those things, was they were like, nothing we had made had been profitable at this point. You Mean Dupree made some money, and we did okay with that. But nothing that would say, hey, here's a billion-dollar movie.
Right, exactly. Yeah, you should be helming this project.
Of a Marvel movie, right?
Yeah, here, let's put it in.
But apparently, you know, out of that meeting came another meeting and another meeting, and then pretty soon they were working on the project, right? And they talked a lot about the process and kind of their thought on the character and why they made some changes and why, you know, they feel like, you know, Winter Soldier, and I think we can all agree, Winter Soldier is that turning point for the MCU where we kind of stopped being like, you know, comic booky and really started being more grounded.
Genre driven.
This could be genre driven, right? This could be a spy movie meets superheroes. This can be a space opera meets superheroes, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, they did what they did on Winter Soldier, and they didn't even have the job for Civil War until they had pretty much done filming, cut the film together, sent it up to Feige, and Feige liked the director's cut that they gave them enough that he said, hey, let's give you Civil War, which at that time they didn't even know it was going to be Civil War. Apparently, Joe and Anthony Russo were very instrumental in saying, we want to do Civil War.
Oh.
And here's where a lot of the interesting bits come in, because right around the time of Civil War is when the publishing advisory board disbanded and they got rid of that. If you recall, for the first several years of Marvel movies, everything that they did was passed by a team of comic book writers and editors said, yes, you can do this with the character. No, you shouldn't do this with the character. This is not, you know, what they would do, say, things like that, right? It led to some really great things. Led to some issues, obviously, things like Edgar Wright leaving at Ant-Man and that being delayed as long as it was due to that. You know, a lot of issues came up out of that. Apparently, they said, hey, we want to do Civil War. Joe Russo specifically, like, loved Civil War, wanted to do it. And they started talking about there were several roadblocks that came with Civil War. The first thing was we put together the script. And in the script, if you recall, it's a very prevalent storyline up until that last act where we got to get to Russia. There's these five super soldiers that we've got to stop who are about to be deployed, right?
Yep.
And then you get there and it turns out, no, there's not. And this was all Zemo's doing to show Iron Man the footage and that and like rift the Avengers apart, right? And apparently the advisory board said, absolutely not. You can't do that. They said they got to team up at the end and fight the five super soldiers. And Joe and Anthony Russo were like, then it's not Civil War.
Right.
So
if they all team up, that's not, words have meanings, believe it or not.
Right. It's just Marvel team up at that point. Right.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
We can't do that. We're not going to do that. And apparently Kevin Feige backed the Russo brothers. And this is what led to, I don't know if you remember the whole Ike Perlmutter dropping out of the company because Bob Iger backed the Russos and Feige and said, I'm back in their play. We're not going to do this. And that's when the advisory committee was disbanded. That's when they all went their separate ways. Ike Perlmutter dropped out. And so we got the Civil War that they wanted, which was great. I think we can all agree. Fantastic film, right? Another hurdle. Yeah, go.
So just tangentially related to what we're seeing right now with the whole Variety report, do you think the moment that happened, while it saved Civil War, it maybe had a bigger domino effect on the MCU, maybe for the negative, that, yeah, we got Civil War and we got Winter Soldier, but now look what it's done. We've got the Eternals. Like do you think that was the domino that started?
Yeah. No, that's a great question. And this is nothing that I've learned from the Russos, right? But I do think I think some of the issues and I don't know. The Variety article is pretty much debunked at this point.
Oh, there's a lot of several people debunking the entire thing. There's a lot
of falsehoods in that, which boggles my mind because it's Variety. But whatever, you know.
New Yorker just had the same thing with Hasan Minhaj, so you know, they're not invalid.
Yeah, like anyway, I think there is a lot of issues with what we're seeing in the MCU right now. I don't think anybody is blind to that fact. I think at the beginning of the MCU, the advisory board was necessary.
Right.
Because Feige is one man, and as big of a fan as he might be, and as well as he might know these characters, he doesn't know them as well as the people who are responsible for writing them for several years at that
point. Yeah.
I think that some of the issues that we're seeing with the MCU now is because it is just Feige, and there are some moments where you could see the inmates are running the asylum, and there are some moments where you can see like the little bit, there's some control there. And I don't think we need the advisory board in the way that it was set up before.
Right.
But I do think you need an extra setting. I do think there should be, hey, some comic book people who know these characters kind of saying, no, Taika, you can't do that in your shitty Love and Thunder movie, right? Like, I think there's got to be more tightening of the reins in some aspects and not so much in others. Where I think, personally, what would really benefit Marvel at this stage of the game is building another board like that that consists of comic book know-how and comic book people, but also people like the Russo brothers.
Who are filmmakers and are instrumental
in what happened.
So let me ask this question, because I think like it's pretty fascinating to hear that Marvel was one way, some disruptors went no,
mm-hmm.
and this is a better way.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're going, hey guys, we gotta get back on track here. Like,
yeah.
I think is that the opinion of like the Russo brothers have that opinion?
No.
Okay.
This is my, and I want to your clarify opinion. That. This is my opinion. Okay. Based on a little
did
bit of what
did they say anything
the
about the current state of the MCU? They were very political about it.
The question didn't even come up. The job was, let's talk about your careers. So when we got done with the Marvel universe, it was stuff like, let's talk about Cherry, let's talk about the Gray Man, and time was winding down. They didn't even have time for a Q&A. I guarantee you, if there was a Q&A, someone would have asked, well, what do you think of this current state?
Right. They would have given you a non-answer. Yeah.
They were very amiable in some of their answers where there would be some implications of saying, listen, we don't know how it's run right now. And they don't. Like, they've been out of the game.
They've been out for a while.
Before 2019, right? So, like, they've had no input or know-how on the way the Disney Plus shows are going, Shang-Chi and Kang and all that stuff, right? So, like, they don't know. So I would expect them to not have an answer. This answer that I just gave you is my personal answer.
Sure.
Based on the timing of when we lost those advisory people and what's going on in the MCU now, right? And I think the timing of losing them at Civil War was a benefit, because at that point, the foundation is already laid. We know who these characters are. We know where the story is going to end up. And I think at that point, you could have said, okay, we can do what we want and have it not hurt the overall tone or feeling or anything of our universe. But now we're into a stage where we don't have that foundation anymore. Half that foundation died you know, became old age or what have you. And now we're in a rebuilding mode. As much as in Feige we trust, in my personal opinion, he is one guy. He is one guy running an entire studio. And at some point, he needs to delegate things and say, okay, Taika, you do you. Peyton Reed, you do you. Like, you know, just give me the dailies and we'll move on from there, type of thing. So I do think, you know, a couple extra heads in the room would be beneficial. Another thing that I learned, which was very interesting, and just to kind of show you the balls of steel these guys had, we all assumed that by the time they were done with, they were filming Civil War, we had a plan in place for Spider-Man, and we knew the deal with Sony was done and everything. A bit of thing that I learned was that they didn't even know they had Spider-Man until they were in the editing room.
Yeah, I heard that. Yes.
They had filmed everything. They were editing it. And I don't know if you heard this part, CJ, but apparently the call came down and they said, you got to cut Spider-Man. Things with Sony fell apart. Sony walked away. You got to get rid of him. And they go, we can't get rid of him.
Yep.
We get rid of him, the whole movie falls apart. And they were like, well, you got to figure it out. And their reaction was, then you come down here and do it. And they left the editing room for 2 weeks. They didn't walk back in. And then in that 2 weeks, we somehow magically got the deal with Sony. And like, whew, I would not have the balls to do that. I don't know about you guys. That's insane. Other than that, it was a lot of like director speak, how they made it into the business, kind of their views on, you know, kind of how things were run and everything like that. But like what my major takeaway was, these were two guys who loved what they were doing, were in the right place at the right time, and failed enough to the point where they could somehow walk into a room with Kevin Feige and say, listen, we've done the TV shtick. We know how to do serialized storytelling. And better yet, we know all the things not to do because here are all of our failures.
Right.
And for them to pull off what they did, now being some of the best directors out there, and you know, box office numbers proves it, they directed four of the biggest movies of all time, you know. So I don't want to take up another 20 minutes, but that was my experience. I thought it was great. It was wonderful. A lot of interesting knowledge and things that were learned. So that actually we can continue to talk about this so that you guys can talk a little bit. That actually does bring me into kind of another thing that I was thinking about, where we're seeing this year success in, listen, the art of the billion-dollar blockbuster is done. I think we've talked about this before. Putting 250, 300, 500 million to a movie and knowing you're going to walk away with $1 billion is not the norm anymore.
Right.
You can blame the pandemic. You can blame the failing of movie theaters. You can blame the strikes. Whatever you want to blame, I think it's a little bit of everything.
Right.
It's just not there, you know. So the biggest movies, and when I say the biggest movies, I mean the biggest profitable movies we saw this year were things like Barbie and Taylor Swift, The Eras Tour. And what kind of podcast would that could have be if we did not mention Taylor Swift?
At least once.
An episode, right? but also the latest profitable movie being Five Nights at Freddy's. And Josh, if you don't know this movie,
I know what it is.
Yeah, I know you know what it is. I don't know if you know the numbers though. Movie costs $20 million to make, which is expensive by Blumhouse standards, but cheap by every other studio standards, right? Opening night, Friday night, made $90 million. So already, boom, quadruple of profits in one night, and it just is keeping going, right?
Yep.
And that's with a simultaneous release on a free streaming service. So anybody could have watched this thing for free, yet they still put out $90 million to go see it in the theater. I think that's a big deal. And the reason I bring it up, in conjunction with my experience with the Russos, is Jason Blum was very vocal about the fact that we are not making a movie for everybody. We are not making a four-quadrant movie. We're not looking for the mall walkers. This is a movie we are making for the fans. Mm-hmm. This is for the fans to go and enjoy and finally see this thing in real life. And I think when we look at some of the other profitable movies we saw this year, Taylor Swift is not a four-quadrant movie. It's very specifically for Taylor Swift fans. Barbie, I would argue, is not a four-quadrant movie either, even though it's probably the most larger range of people. It is still a specific movie for a specific fan base. And we're seeing specificity be more profitable as opposed to, let's take, for example, Marvel. Let's take a niche character or a niche IP and then make it appeal to the masses, and then we make $1 billion. These movies are proving that you don't have to do that. And I'm curious what your thoughts are on this being the norm now moving forward. And are we going to see less expensive Marvel movies, but for more of the niche comic book audience?
I I don't know. We kind of had the philosophy together that I shouldn't have to read, a 4-page book in, I mean, not a 4-page book. I shouldn't have to read 3 books to understand 1 movie. I shouldn't have to do homework in order to enjoy a film, right? And I think that the FNAF movie didn't do that, right? It definitely did cater to the people who do know all the lore and all that. But I, knowing nothing about it, got just as much out of it as my wife does. But my 10-year-old was like, oh, my God, and this and that and this and that and this and that, right? And pointing things out left and right. I think if it takes that approach in the sense of you can still see this and this story will still tell you a story and this story will still have a logical beginning, middle, and end that you don't need to know all the stuff that came before it and afterward, then yeah, I'll be excited for that. But if it becomes the train of, well, did you see the first 3 movies or did you read this or did you check out this podcast or did you do, which is basically a lot of concerns that we have with the MCU, if that becomes less of it and becomes a little bit more siloed and contained, then yeah, I'm on board for movies, not just the MCU, for movies in general. To do that, let's take something that there is a passionate fan base about, or let's take something that has some content to it, and let's make this work. I would be more open for that in there, and yeah, low budget, so that way, we don't need a billion people going to see it to make it profitable, so that way we can continue to tell the story if it's profitable. I think would be the better way forward. Now, will Hollywood learn the right lesson? I'm not too sure. But
yeah, that's the question that Brian asked. Will we get that? And the answer is no. Because they still think they're hitting home runs.
Yeah, no.
They still think that everything they're putting out there is worthy of all the former fanfare. And it's just look, I'm not going to see the Marvels in theater. Mm. Period. I didn't see Guardians.
I don't.
And Guardians
you.
Was the best thing they've done this year. I haven't seen any of this stuff in the theater because none of it has been really, really good except for Guardians 3.
I will say No Way Home just because technically that is part of post Endgame.
All right, fine. I saw that in the theater, but yeah. I'm not even sure you can include that.
I think you can, but I think the difference is this, right? The excitement around No Way Home and the promises it did fulfill and was going to fulfill, you don't have anything like that in anything else anymore. To CJ's point, FNAF, even though it was not appealing to get new fans, it still told a story, a complete story, and if you did not know anything about it, you still got it. And I'm curious if we, in the new state of movies now, are okay with just making $200 million on a $20 million movie.
I think, you know, maybe what I mean? what we'll see, right? Because to Josh's point, hell no, the studios still think they're knocking this out the park, right? They still think that this is a successful business model. What I think we'll probably see is, and we talked about this the other week, right, with A24 and Blumhouse, I think we're going to see a bunch of smaller studios start doing more story-focused, low-budget movies that are actually good, and maybe with an IP that's out there. And then they start putting the squeeze on the major studios and saying, why did this no-name studio, why did this no-name production company somehow make a highly profitable, maybe not successful in the sense of, you know, a huge opening in the sense of a billion people saw it, but a huge profitable movie that they'll start changing.
Because
FNAF already went down like 78% week over week, right? But at the same time, that's okay. There's there's a streaming service playing the same thing.
400% of its budget back. That's the thing.
And for Blumhouse, that is huge, right? That now finances like 9 other movies, right?
Right.
Like that just paves the way. So Blumhouse is perfectly fine with a 78% drop off because they just made their money and now they finance 4 others, right? And sequels. and other movies. That little movie that someone wanted to make, and they're just like, well, listen, we need more money as a company. They're now going back to someone probably like the Russos, saying, hey, we now have money in the bank. Do you want to make that thing? Because now we're able to do it. Let's greenlight your thing and make it happen. I think we'll probably see the rise of that, which, thank God, right? We've seen so many studios owned by this conglomerate, that conglomerate, that conglomerate, that I'm okay with a smaller studio maybe becoming more successful.
So you think we're going back to the 90s indie boom?
I don't know about indie boom, but yeah, I think we're going a little bit back to some of the 90s stuff.
That's what I think will, that's the thing that will cause Marvel and DC to stop and sit up and really evaluate what's what. Because until we get, you know, an Image property or Dark Horse or Boom or something, where, you know, that IP is made by a smaller studio. I'm not saying A24, but whatever.
Sure.
If we got a property from one of those comic book houses that a movie is made and it is a big enough hit to make people lift their heads and say, wait, what are they doing? That's what it's going to take.
I am almost positive. Hang on.
I think we're right there. I think we're there.
We have a Spawn movie coming out from Blumhouse.
I was like, these are also the companies that are getting waivers right now during the strike to keep performing because they have all the other financial stuff set up that it's more equitable. I think we're right at that at precipice. And unfortunately, this is my reactionary view to this. I'm only seeing this now, but this has probably been the plan from some of these production companies for the last 5-6 years, right? And Josh just went down as we talked about the huge A24 rabbit hole. I mean, they're highly positioned to do it. Blumhouse had The Invisible Man and other properties. They're highly positioned to do it. And I'm sure there's a couple other ones that are out there I just don't know that aren't household names yet that could totally pick this up and just say, here's that indie comic, here's that thing, boom, $100 million, if even. Let's make this happen. And there are people who want to work on that kind of stuff. People who are like,
right,
I would love to be part of a superhero movie, but I won't be part of the Marvel machine. That's a 9-year contract and I'm not going to do it. And pick up other people that are going to go for it.
So just, I mean, it's from Variety. So apparently take that with a grain of salt now. But Blumhouse is doing the Spawn film, which is releasing in 2025. And they're talking about Jamie Foxx and Jeremy Renner being in the film.
Does Image still own the IP for that?
Yes, they do. McFarlane himself owns the IP. It's not even Image, because if you recall, okay, Image was the publication. The whole purpose of Image was, you own the rights to your own characters. We're just putting the book out. So McFarlane owns Spawn soup to nuts. Image does not own that character or anything to do with it. Same thing with, you know, everything, the Wildcats and Savage Dragon and everybody that came out under that Image. They're owned by their particular writers and artists.
So I'm more excited for that. Well, we'll get Marvel fatigue, but give me something else. And then I think, to Josh's point, I'll have to stand up and notice.
I'm not even like, but so here's the next question. Marvel is great, but not near the caliber pre-Endgame, right?
No.
Can they fix this? Like, in my mind, I'm thinking like, hey,
it'll be too late though.
Will it be too late though? Right. Like, but like, we've got a whole slew of films. Why don't we say, okay, hey, let's force ourselves to be a little bit more creative. Let's start slashing some budgets. Let's make a $20 million Doctor Strange movie. Let's do a, you know, $4 million Blade movie. Let's force ourselves to be more creative and not rely on CGI and this kind of stuff. Put out quality character-driven work and then build back up to the $200 million Secret War movie that we know we want to do, right? Like, is that the answer? Is that the answer, though, is my question.
It should be, but to Josh's point, Hollywood, I don't think Hollywood's going to learn until it's too late.
That would mean that they are doing an honest assessment of their performance. And one that, right, an honest assessment of performance based on the quality of the product made, not the outcome of the dollars.
Right.
Right. Not the box office monies or the merchandising or, you know, the advertising, the marketing, everything that goes along with it, but the actual product itself. And there's no way that these studios will ever evaluate the product, honestly.
You know, you would think now would be the best time, though, with the SAG strike still going on.
Yeah, well.
To say, hey, let's save some money. Instead of sending me an email saying, hey, great news, your subscription is going to go up in price and we're going to take away features from right. you, but we still value you as a customer. Why not look at some of
the... you're again, applying logic to the situation, Brian. I see the
I'm applying fall. Business acumen, and I'm not a business owner. That's what Disney makes, right what now. Boggles my mind.
You're applying like, business acumen to Disney, and that's just not a fair fight.
Disney got to be Disney.
They lost that heart and soul long ago.
I don't know if it was that long ago. You don't put out, you know, Iron Man without having that heart and soul, because that movie is all heart and soul. Anyway, I thought I'd just ask that question. So I hope you all listening to me for 20 minutes regale you with things that I learned in a small movie theater in New Jersey. And I highly suggest you go to smallcastlecinemas.com and see what else they got cooking, because the event was a lot of fun.
And next weekend they have a Zach and Miri event.
Yeah, they got the Zach and Miri event with Kevin Smith there. Kevin Smith is there all the time, so if you are a Kevin Smith fan and you go to one of these events, odds are you'll see him. Sometimes he does. From what the guy Jay and Silent Bob's told us, sometimes he'll stick around, he'll do meet and greets. There was one time where they did an event like this, and then they showed a special movie that is not supposed to exist, but Kevin Smith has. So I don't know if I should really say it, but the Joel Schumacher cut of Batman Forever, apparently Kevin Smith has it. So things like that happen all the time. So if you're in the area, if you're on the East Coast, it's about an hour and a half drive from any one of us. Suggest you check it out. And support the local little movie theater.
All right. Well, with that, I am ready to do the points tally for this episode. So here we go. First off, 2 points to Brian for letting me get you on the Apple train. Appreciate that. Well. 1 point for the Josh, you losing faith in humanity with the con right there. It was audible and I could feel it, so I had to do that. 2 points to Brian for being reasonable in an unreasonable situation, which is very uncharacteristic. So you really did a good job of fighting back that. Each of you gets 1 point for being an MD 101 brother. Yay! 1 point should to Josh of why does everything need to be a con? Points? Right. What?
Shouldn't we each get 101 points? I'm just...
Sure, you are fine. Sure. 101 point for being an MD-101 brother. Okay, great. All right.
Excellent.
1 point to Josh for asking the real question of why does everything need to be a convention? 2 points to Brian for holding up a mirror to the MCU, but 2 points to Josh for showing its true reflection once the mirror was held up. Making the total... This is a high point game. 107... for Brian, 105 for Josh, making Brian this week's winner.
This is the first time you have hosted and I have won. I'm just going to point that out.
All right. Well, ladies and gents, listeners all alike, thank you so much for making us your walk around your neighborhood, your drive to work, or maybe to New Jersey to finally go support Kevin Smith's little indie theater. Thank you so much, and we will talk to you next week.